Good morning, all. This is the business meeting of the Judicial Council of California for July 27th, 2012. I inquire, Nancy, do we have anyone joining us on the phone?
Yes, Justice Miller should be on the phone.
Yes.
Good morning, Justice Miller.
On the phone.
Thank you. The meeting is now in session. As many of you know, our July meeting is traditionally devoted to the judicial branch budget. But it is a reflection, frankly, of the number and complexity of the issues facing the judicial branch this year, that we also have a consent agenda, and that items relating to court facilities have also been added to our discussion agenda for this meeting. I'd also like to note that this is our ninth Judicial Council meeting this year, and that we are currently scheduled to have 12 meetings this year, well above the normal 6 to 8 that we've historically seen with Judicial Council. And I want to thank and acknowledge the commitment and dedication of Judicial Council members to attend and contribute to these meetings and the support of the AOC's Secretariat, Nancy Spiro, to enable these important public meetings to happen. Today, as the agenda reflects, the Council will hear public comment. Due to time constraints, we have deferred the adoption of minutes for past meetings, the Interim Administrative Director's Report, and the internal committee reports from ENP, RUPRO, and our Technology Committee, and PCLC, and my report, until our regular August meeting. We will approve the consent calendar this morning and begin our discussion agenda for judicial branch budget allocations and reductions to state judiciary entities and the action item on the trial court budget allocations. Also, following a short lunch break this afternoon, we will then reconvene for our discussion agenda on the two court facilities action items, and that is reflected in a revised policy for prioritizing facility modifications, and also a recommendation on the modifications budget and proposed funding. I remind everyone that our meetings are audiocast live with real-time captioning for the California Courts website. For the benefit of the online audience, and also for council members joining us by telephone, please speak into your microphones, identify yourself or each other by name, so that listeners can follow real-time captioning readers and the readers. I want to indicate before we start that I have an agenda report, and I plan to be brief, because I plan to cede some of my time to an honored guest that we are privileged to have with us here today. That's Mr. William Robinson. He's president of the American Bar Association. I think Mr. Robinson, whom some of us met this morning, will be able to provide us in a few minutes some national context for our upcoming budget discussion items, and will be able to share some insights on the ABA's efforts on court funding issues nationwide. First, I'd like to welcome the final member of our 9 incoming members of the Council whose terms will begin in December. That's Judge Alan Hardcastle from the Superior Court of Sonoma County, President-elect of the California Judges Association. Congratulations on your election and welcome to Council, Judge Hardcastle.
Good morning.
I also know some of our new colleagues are with us here at this session as observers. Let me talk very briefly my report on the judicial branch budget. It's an overview. It'll be brief. On June 27th, the governor signed the 2012-13 Budget Act. It represents 4 straight years of cuts for the judicial branch and requires us to absorb a $544 million cut this coming fiscal year. I oppose these cuts, like all of you. They have a serious impact on the ability of the courts to provide timely due process for the people of California. I do, however, appreciate the governor and the legislature being willing to work with us under these very difficult circumstances for our state, and I recognize the hard choices they faced in balancing this year's budget. Again, I want to thank all the members of our ad hoc budget group who represented the interests of the branch in the budget negotiations, and all the many other presiding judges, court administrators, CJA, bar leaders, AOC staff, and, of course, council members for the many, many efforts around the clock in Sacramento and in your own homes, in districts, to your representatives. Now we have to continue the challenging task of making this budget work for all users of our court system. At this time, before we begin our meeting, I'd like to welcome Mr. William Robinson, President of the American Bar Association, and thank him for joining us this morning. Please come to the podium, Mr. Robinson. I had the opportunity to meet with Mr. Robinson in my chambers this morning, along with state bar representatives, to discuss the funding crisis confronting the courts in California and across the nation. And as you know, the ABA, under Mr. Robinson's leadership, has been very active on advocating on behalf of the nation's courts and the funding challenges they face. The American Bar Association has convened the Task Force on the Preservation of the Justice System. As you know, this year it's been chaired by David Boies and Ted Olson to focus on the severe underfunding of our justice system. Jody Patel and I met with David Boies and Ted Olson several days ago in Missouri, talked briefly about this matter. Mr. Boies and Olson joined us for a hearing before the Senate Judiciary Committee this last April. Many of you were present to provide a national perspective on court funding. I appreciate all the work of the ABA and the task force that's done on focusing policymakers on judicial funding. This morning we had a good opportunity to talk about the California judicial branch, its funding challenges, the other underfunding of other parts of the country, and possible solutions and strategies that we can jointly undertake to improve court funding. Mr. Robinson, if you would please welcome us and with an address of what the ABA is up to in your visit here. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chief Justice, and thank you, members of the council. It's truly an honor and a privilege to be here this morning, even under these very difficult circumstances in terms of funding for our judiciary in California. California courts and your employees are under extreme stress, and I commend each of you for your dedication and your drive to preserve our justice system, which is so essential to our representative constitutional government and the very freedom that uniquely characterizes our country in this ever more complex global economy. When I read the headlines from Sacramento, from San Francisco, and from other communities around the state, like so many Americans, I am stunned. And yet, I know you are way beyond emotions at this point. You have an intellectual challenge, a professional challenge that we all share with you. There is really no time left to fret about the truly devastating effects of $1 billion in cuts to our courts. Who could have ever envisioned that in our lifetime the courts would be experiencing this? It is simply time to act, and I'm not telling you anything you don't already know and have not already concluded. I am here as president of the American Bar Association to emphasize that we stand with you and are prepared to support you as we go forward. We do not have your answers to your problems, but as fellow officers of the court, we share your frustration and disappointment, and we are prepared to be a resource for you as you continue to work hard to solve this challenge. I'm pleased to announce today that our incoming president, Laurel Bellows from Chicago, is fully committed on this issue going forward. She has asked Steve Zak, my predecessor, and has asked me to step in for David Boies and Ted Olson, who have done such wonderful work over the last 2 years, to step in for them, give them some relief, and to take on the challenge of carrying our ABA commitment forward across this country, including California. 42 states in 2011 cut funding to their judiciaries. This is an unacceptable situation. I do not need to describe what I have seen over the last year. You know it painfully firsthand, but I have seen it from my home state of Kentucky, where we have lost 45% of our judicial funding just since 2009 and are closing our courts this year for several business days for lack of funding, layoffs, and so on. Layoffs from Kentucky to Oregon, layoffs in California, layoffs across this country, and the judiciary finds it increasingly difficult to carry out its constitutional responsibility. This crisis of court underfunding did not develop overnight. And to put it in, I guess, Olympic terms, since the big opening ceremony is tonight, the solution developing it, working for it, and achieving it. This is a challenge not for sprinters. This is for marathoners. And I'm here to assure you that the ABA is in for the long haul. We have been committed, and we will continue to be committed on this critical issue. Our Task Force on Preservation of the Justice System, co-chaired so well the last 2 years with such dedication by Ted Olson and David Boies, has spent so much time and effort gathering data, holding hearings, and developing solutions as to how we can best advocate effectively for our courts, state by state, community by community. We know that public education matters. People, so many people today, simply do not understand what our courts do, why they're so important, why our courts are so essential to our constitutional democracy. That is why I have spent so much time this past year speaking in over 60 cities about the crisis underfunding of our courts in this country. I've spoken to the chambers of commerce. I've spoken to Rotary clubs. I've spoken to law students and practicing attorneys, legal educators. And everywhere I've gone, everywhere I could get the benefit of a microphone, this issue has been part of what I've had to say, because it's just that essential. We have also used this crisis in the process to co-host Court Funding Symposium at my alma mater that has been of national significance in studying this issue from an analytical perspective. We have authored more than 50 op-eds on the issue and have developed a cool toolkit with videos and tip sheets for bar leaders on what they might consider doing in their respective states. And we will do more in the coming year and years beyond that. In times of financial crisis, our courts actually face more demand, more pressure for delivering justice, and yet the money shrinks and shrinks and shrinks. But our judiciary is a co-equal branch of government and deserves to be funded as such. When those who founded our country won the Revolutionary War, the historians tell us they had very little money, had to rent storefronts to hold meetings, couldn't build roads, of course had no utilities. But they wisely at that time wrote into our Constitution three co-equal branches of government. And those of us with the benefit of education, including professional education, we know and understand that the courts are the linchpin of our constitutional democracy. They are the essential ingredient that makes our democracy unique in the history of the world, and certainly unique in our time. We, as officers of the court, have no more sacred, privileged responsibility than to stand up and speak out for our courts. That's where the American Bar Association is. That's our number one issue. That is our number one commitment. No one would seriously consider, for budgetary reasons, closing a firehouse or a police station or a hospital emergency room one day a week. You know, it's unthinkable. But our courts are the emergency room of democracy. That's where the triage for constitutional rights is administered and decided upon, case after case after case. And that is the essence of this freedom for which so many in the history of our country for over 200 years have sacrificed and even died to pass it to us, as our president would say, in our time. We must do something in our time to address this. We, as officers of the court, need to work together. And I assure you that the organized bar, the American Bar Association, like your great California Bar Association, under the leadership of John Streeter, we are there for you. We don't have all the answers, but we do have resources. We do have intellect, education, and commitment to bring to your support. We have done that over the last 2 years. Together we have not yet succeeded, and anything less than success on this critical issue is unacceptable. So we look forward to working with you as we go forward. We hope and trust that you will not hesitate to call upon us, and I assure you that the American Bar Association will be there as a resource and as a support for you on this very, very critical issue. Thank you so much, Chief Justice. Thanks to all of you for this opportunity. And again, thank you for the great work that you're doing for the citizens of this great state when it comes to justice, access to justice, the delivery of justice. Our quality of life depends upon it. Thank you all very, very much.
Thank you, President Robinson, for that inspiring speech and for your leadership with the ABA on putting a spotlight on the judicial funding crisis. We look forward to your continued leadership on the Preservation of the Justice System Task Force. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we come to that part of our agenda referencing public comment. Although we have 10 requests for public comment, 9 are for the specific agenda item F. So when we call agenda item F, we will hear public comment related to that. We have several speakers, including judicial officers, who will be called first on item F when we get there. In the meantime, I believe we have one speaker speaking on the public comment calendar to a non-agenda item. I invite Mr. David Farrar from the State Bar of California, member to the agenda, to the podium.
Has joined the conference.
Our agenda shows 5 minutes, Mr. Farrar. Thank you.
Let me turn my stopwatch on here, Your Honor.
Okay.
So I can stick to the script. Good morning, Honorable Chief Justice and honorable members of the Judicial Council. Thank you for allowing me to address you on, among other things, local trial court funding. My name is David Farrar, and I have been a member of the California Bar for 39 years. I started my legal career by serving as a law clerk to the recently deceased Robert Kelleher, Judge Robert Kelleher in the Central District of California. Since that time, I have been a partner at the law firms of Jones Day and Shepard Mullen. In fact, one of my former partners at Shepard Mullen recently served as presiding judge of the Los Angeles County Superior Court. Like the previous speaker, and I'm sure like everybody here in this room, what's happening to our courts is a tragedy. And I think the problem is so big that I certainly don't even pretend to have what might be called a global solution or even part of a global solution. But I have one small recommendation which I believe would make a small difference in increasing local trial court funding, and I'd like to share that with you this morning. You may remember that I previously addressed you in May, shortly after the governor announced his May revised budget, which substantially cut the judiciary's funding. At that time, I urged you to make a simple change to an allocation formula to simply allow local trial courts to keep a higher percentage of the revenue they collect from court-ordered debt. I pointed out that if even 10% of the $7.5 billion could be collected, that $750 million would make a big difference in funding local trial court operations. Immediately following my appearance here, I experienced for the first time in my 70 years my personal 15 minutes of fame. National Public Radio, NPR, even picked up a story from the Metropolitan News article about my speaking here. My mother would have called me were she alive. And well-known columnist Bill Buryarski even wrote a column entitled, "If the courts are so broke, why are they owed so much money?" Now, that's a really good question. Do you have an answer? There is considerable speculation to the effect that I guess people who don't pay just don't have the money. But the simple fact is there is absolutely no evidence to support that speculation. For all we know, All the people that don't pay are drug dealers driving Cadillac Escalades who simply have no respect for the law. And that could be why they don't pay. In fact, a recent survey by a local NPR station said that found that over one-third of the respondents said that although they could afford to pay, they were not going to. Why is that? Because according to a number of callers, whereas collections agencies were pursuing them on behalf of other creditors, nobody was pursuing them on behalf of the courts. Now, why is that? My speculation is that since the local trial courts do not keep any of the additional revenue collected, there is absolutely no economic incentive for them to try harder. In my written comments, which I hope are part of your packet, I spell out exactly what this judicial council could do to allow the local trial courts to keep a larger allocation of the excess revenue which they collect. Will this work? Who knows? But one thing is clear. The current system is broken. And right now, the $7.5 billion is in court order debt is just sitting there as a major embarrassment to all of us. And if even 10% of the $7.5 billion were collected, we would all be better off. And finally, there is no downside for trying. And as the ABA president said, this is the time to act. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Farah. As Mr. Farah referenced, there are written materials also that each council member has on the subject we are discussing, as well as the topic of court order debt collection referenced by Mr. Farah.